the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women moan, boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
butt and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Thank you. game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Stirling engine is recognized by the Department of Energy as a promising alternative to the internal combustion engine. An external combustion engine, the Stirling burns any fuel, creating heat for the cylinder. The heat itself powers the engine. Any fuel can be used, liquid, solid, or gas. The Stirling even operates on heat from nuclear and solar energy. Combustion is continuous and complete, quiet and clean. Ongoing research in aeronautical and automotive engines at the NASA Lewis Research Center in Cleveland, Ohio, indicates the Stirling may be the engine of the future. Feasibility studies by manufacturers indicate the technology to produce Stirling engines commercially exists today. Value engineering studies have shown the Stirling can be manufactured in low production volumes at a competitive cost. The engine can be built to provide power for both propulsion and stationary applications. A Stirling engine developed by Mechanical Technology Incorporated for NASA Lewis Research Center and the Department of Energy has been evaluated by a NASA Technology Utilization Program under actual driving conditions. The Stirling engine was installed in an Air Force van. The van's original 150-horsepower diesel engine was replaced by a 75-horsepower Stirling and assigned actual duty service at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. Air Force operators drove the van throughout the test, serving 10 to 15 aircraft on a flight line, driving from base to aircraft, moving about the field in and around aircraft, stop and go, hauling personnel and equipment. Performance was monitored by special equipment mounted in the van. Engine speed, vehicle speed, and miles accumulated were recorded daily. During this Air Force mission, three different fuels were used: unleaded gasoline, JP-4 aircraft fuel, and diesel fuel. The van functioned normally during the one-year evaluation period on whatever fuel was available. The Stirling's high torque capability at low speeds enabled towing of all heavy support equipment. After 1,400 hours and 7,000 miles, results showed improved fuel economy. A second vehicle, a standard Air Force truck, was also evaluated. The truck's original 95-horsepower internal combustion engine was replaced by a 75-horsepower Stirling engine. Tests were conducted over a one-year period for 1,000 hours and 19,000 miles of open highway and city streets, on rough and rural roads, and in normal traffic in a variety of environments. In moderate climate, the Norfolk, Virginia area, an expediter mission at Langley Air Force Base. Hot, moist sea air environment. A general transportation assignment at Eglin Air Force Base, Florida. Hot, dry environment. Base taxi service at Randolph Air Force Base, Texas. In the north, a base supply mission at Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska. In addition, the truck was driven from Texas to Washington, D.C., a distance of 1,600 miles. The entire trip averaged over 50 miles per hour. The Stirling consistently delivered more miles per gallon. Current engines are a major contributor to the severe atmospheric pollution in our cities today. Exhaust emissions were evaluated, and the Stirling engine met federal emission standards. No catalytic converter or particulate trap was needed. The exhaust is cool and clean. The Stirling engine can help reduce these pollutants to meet even the most stringent California standards. Also, several maintenance requirements were eliminated, with only one spark plug to start combustion, no carburetor, no catalytic converter, and no muffler. Because the engine oil is not exposed to combustion products, it stayed clean and uncontaminated throughout the test, eliminating the oil changes. The Stirling engine offers increased fuel economy, multi-fuel flexibility, and reduced life cycle costs. Its economy and efficiency of operation are being demonstrated. The Stirling engine appears ready for market. NASA's Technical Utilization Division continues to work with U.S. industry, providing data to manufacturers and end users, answering the questions on Stirling technology. And the technology is available now to build the power plant of the future today. Power for America, on the land and in space. The Stirling Engine, an alternative power plant of the future.
Of the United States, it alarmed me that a little country over in the Far East could actually cripple the United States. And realizing that the entire industrial base of the United States and the world is based on the supply and the utilization of energy, it became imperative that we must try to bring in an alternate fuel source and do it very quickly. Of course, I thought originally with the right type of funding, we could possibly get it in within 6 months, but reality shows that the 12 to 15 years was more correct in this projection.
Back in the 70s, Stan Meyer set out single-handedly to solve America's energy problems. He decided to do it using water, the world's most abundant storehouse of hydrogen, which is a far more powerful fuel than oil. For 15 years, Meyer has been fighting to get his inventions taken seriously.
Most inventors have to be a loner. You have to be somewhat thick-skinned. And don't rely on other people to support you, because they will not. More times than not, an invention is really stolen from the inventors. Even in my prior development of high technology, I've had patents taken from me. I learned from the School of Hard Knocks to be very cautious.
Meyer has always stood out against the crowd. He has no formal qualifications as a scientist because he didn't wait to graduate from high school, leaving early to go straight into research at the high-powered Battelle Institute in his native Ohio. Now he works full-time as a private inventor. He's built a device with potentially revolutionary implications. There is nothing startling about a machine that can extract the hydrogen from water. What is highly unusual is that it should do so with ordinary tap water. The conventional method is called electrolysis. Meyer has turned that process on its head. Unlike electrolysis, his device doesn't use up large amounts of electric current, nor does it produce an enormous amount of waste heat. For 20 years, he has been refining a method to fracture water, which produces vast amounts of hydrogen on demand. This is not his latest apparatus. He was unwilling to let us point a camera at that. This is the simple device he used to convince a reluctant patent office that his revolutionary concept actually works. Alloy rods, acting as electrodes, are housed in a Perspex container that's filled with water. Normal mains voltage is fed in through a transformer, but critically, there is virtually no current consumed, less than half an amp. The result is dramatic. Hydrogen pours off with a flick of a switch. Meyer claims the key is his electronics, which pulses electricity rapidly across the rods at up to 20,000 cycles per second. In a way that's not readily apparent, this process transforms the equation. Whereas in conventional electrolysis, three times as much energy is consumed as is produced in the form of hydrogen fuel, in Meyer's apparatus, the reverse is true. It appears to produce several 100% more energy than it consumes.
Stan has something that's characteristic of the people that sound like they've done something to tap zero-point energy. has high frequency, high voltage, and there's a combination of the two at which something occurs. With Chernetsky in Russia, it was what he called a self-sustaining discharge. The tube would run by itself. When Stan gets this effect, the amount of hydrogen and oxygen that are emitted off these two electrodes is a step function. It almost boils the water. If I did this with standard electrochemicals, I need current, and the water should rise a degree every couple of seconds. With Stan's, it'll run for a half hour, and the water temperature hasn't changed. Something's different.
Meyer demonstrates this repeatedly without any difficulty, and yet on the face of it, it represents an extraordinary revolution. His measurements over the years suggest 1,700% greater efficiency than conventional electrolysis. And if he's to be believed, he's getting much better results from his latest, still secret invention.
Well, I first got involved with Stan Meyer when I went over there with a couple of colleagues to look at his water-splitting device. And so we arrived at Stanley Meyer. He had a demonstration cell. We filled it with tap water. In fact, I did that myself. And he switched it on, and almost instantly, the three jaws dropped because of the rate at which the gas poured off. It was quite spectacular.
Whatever energy source Stan Meyer had tapped, it was not explicable by the electric power that was going into it. So something was powering it outside of conventional wisdom.
There is no question that the gas coming off in such abundance is hydrogen. Meyer ignites it to produce a high-temperature flame able to cut through metal.
Stanley Meyer has faced a lot of difficulties. He's three times tried to launch the device and produce press conferences at the technical press round, but he's been almost universally slated. In the early days, very much so, they just ridiculed the whole idea. He's getting a little more notice now because some scientists are getting interested. But by and large, science is very intolerant, particularly modern science.
As with Tesla, Griggs and others, Meyer's claims are so far outside the received scientific wisdom that they've been ignored by the majority of the scientific establishment. But then, Meyer has ignored them too. He has poured his energies over the last 10 years into establishing recognition for his claims by getting international patents.
In the processing, there was a great deal of difficulty in trying to process the legal paperwork in such a way as to allow the patent office to fully understand what was actually occurring. In one instant, we brought the water fuel cell to Washington, D.C., and of course I had tweaked it in such a way to produce an enormous amount of hydrogen oxygen gas, and the patent examiner said, no, it will not work based on the electrolysis process. And when we turned it on and produced the enormous amount of hydrogen gas, the examiner finally realized that we were doing exactly that, and went out in the hallway and started screaming and hollering to everybody on the floor, put out all your cigarettes, hydrogen's in the building. So we started laughing and said, well, we certainly convinced everybody in the patent office that we can do what we said we can do.
Even so, the U.S. Patent Office dragged their feet for 3 years before granting patents on the hydrogen-producing device. Since then, against massive resistance, he's managed to get patents established throughout Europe and Japan. But the hydrogen machine was only the first step towards Meyer's ultimate dream. If he gets it right, this application of his technology would change the 21st century in the same way that the Wright brothers and Carl Benz transformed the 20th. He is currently modifying a beach buggy to run on nothing but water. It doesn't have a petrol tank or even a hydrogen container. It has just a tank of water. He's invented a device called a water splitter to replace the spark plug. As the water is injected into the engine, Meyer claims it's fractured into hydrogen and oxygen, and then burned as fuel. Meyer is working on a kit to modify any engine. He hopes to demonstrate it on this car within 12 months.
And of course, the blessing to the use of the water as a fuel source, that on combustion, the byproduct is water mist. So we're even solving the environmental pollution problem at the same time that we're using water to maintain the industrial basis of the world.
Meyer is protective about his inventions to the point of self-confessed paranoia. Most observers describe him as a crank and his car as an aberration. But then madness and genius often go hand in hand. Meyer shares with many inventors a problem that goes well beyond paranoia. As an engineer with no scientific background, he faces a giant hurdle when he tries to communicate with scientists.
One problem is that the language that people use when they're trying to describe their inventions is not the language that I as a scientist am used to, and so I have to translate it, if you like, into a way that I can begin to understand what they're trying to say. It might as well be written in Swahili for all of the sense that it initially makes. And so I'm not particularly inspired to put a lot more effort in the hope that the pearl of wisdom will reveal itself to.
Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before,
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science, which is, and is pretty quick. I'll be joined by Steve. Anyway, I played a couple pods there, one of the Stirling engine that was done by NASA and tested and driven around. That was back in 1992, and had really good results on that deal. And I also played one about Stan Meyer's water for fuel deal. And also over in the Shaziz radio chat room, I posted a couple video links, and over there, Wake Radio chat room as well. Go to www.shazizradio.com, superchat.html, and you'll see those video links. Anyway, the one video that I put in there is it's a simple magnetic levitation. Well, in my mind, it's not simple. It's pretty complex, but it really frustrates me because things like that don't get enough views. There's so many different people out there doing research in alternative energy, and a lot of the keys get overlooked. Essentially, what he's got going on in this video, he's got two copper tubes that are spinning towards each other at high RPMs, and then he puts a neodymium sphere magnet on top of it, and it floats. Magnetic levitation. So, with that said, that particular anomaly could be used in building a really super efficient electric generator. I see these things mechanically every time I watch all these different videos. That's why I try to bring these links to you so that you can see them, and hopefully somebody will take and run with the idea and expand on it. You know, I really get frustrated, and that's why I call it mad science, is because, you know, in the 70s, Stan Myers was running a dune buggy on water. In the early 90s, the NASA was running around using a Stirling engine that would run on any fuel, and it did it cleanly and didn't work exactly like the internal combustion engine. It was considered an external combustion engine. But either way, the technologies to generate electricity have been around since so far back in sometimes as far back as the 1700s through the 1800s and early 1900s or whatever. The technology's there. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Now, I've been cussed out and called everything under the sun for trying to bring ideas to the table with people. You know, you don't know what you're talking about, you know, this and that. And actually, nearly lost a few friendships over the deal because, you know, disagreements in terminology or whatever. But the fact remains, the information, the technology to generate clean, free, renewable, alternative, green energy, or whatever you want to call it, whatever term you want to put on it, has been there all along. There's a man named Gerard Morin who does a video out there where he took a couple transformers, a 50K and a 50 kV and a 25 kV, and he's using a 2500 watt generator to run this doggone thing and getting excellent results out of that. And his outside-the-box thinking, yeah, he'll pretty much tell you the way it is because he won't allow you to lip off at him. He says, if you don't believe it, try it. And if you try it and it don't work, then tell me how. Anyway, but either way, he's talking about instead of amperage, it's radiation that's going on through there, which falls right into what I was talking about as far as frequencies. You know, any material out there, doesn't matter what it is, any material under the sun can be used for fuel. And all you have to do is have a frequency range that can literally shake it apart, split it apart. You know, that's what Stan Myers was doing, using radio frequencies to literally get hydrogen on demand. Ain't no different than what's going on in your microwave oven. You know, when the microwave is rocking the water molecule back and forth, creating friction, which in turn creates heat, it's just a frequency wave doing that. And so with that said, you know, you either hit it with one frequency, you can heat it up, or you hit it with another one that will literally shatter it, just like the opera singer singing on a crystal glass. When the resonance is matched, it'll split itself apart. You can do that with any material, you know. For whatever you think of John Hutchinson, back in the day when he was messing around with radio frequencies and old military equipment, he was literally melting metal like butter with radio frequencies. He was getting levitation and all kinds of stuff, you know, all kinds of anomalies. Would have been a whole lot better for him, and the alternative energy community had had a bunch of guys together to document all the anomalies and go from there to which ones would be worth salvaging and safe and so on and so forth. But, you know, he was pretty much a loner, just like just about every other alternative energy inventor out here. And it's sad because I put this platform together, ShazizRadio.com, so that we could bring these guys, these brilliant minds from all over the planet together to literally prove once and for all energy is free. I already know it is. There's no doubt in my mind, you know. It's just a matter of people got to have something in their hand that they can see, you know, something physical that they can know that, you know, yeah, this definitely does work without a doubt. And that all boils down to manufacturing. Some guys out there like Russ have gotten a hold of some 3D printers and are able to get a little farther in their manufacturing than other guys. And, you know, some guys have access to certain tools that other guys don't have access to. And some folks have the funds. Together, all of them combined could literally, yeah, you know, I say less than 30 days. And I believe that even less than that, we could literally build and prove free energy devices that we could go in any direction. It doesn't matter if you can get anybody to agree just to focus on one specific deal. See, when I first got into alternative energy, I had been working on what would be the equivalent of a alternator style generator. And it was using magnetrons out of lawnmowers. And I was producing high voltage, and that's where I wanted to initially go. And then I also did one using fish tank air pumps. Excuse me, I got to take a drink of my coffee. Fish tank air pumps have little transformers in there that make perfect magnetrons. And I used a flywheel made out of two-part epoxy resin and some doggone magnets and pole pieces. And I got pretty doggone good results out of that deal. All those videos, if you go back and look in there, you'll see all of them with the exception of the one made out of lawnmower magnetrons. I don't remember if I ever made a video of that one. But either way, that was the technology I was working on back in the day, and then that moved into plasma. But I had a buddy of mine who was into alternative energy as well, who then in turn got me distracted away from that, going towards some other technology. So I've always studied Tesla's technology and the ways that we use electricity, which, in my opinion, is so totally inefficient, it's not even funny. But no matter what I found out throughout the entire deal, it always came back to the same thing, frequencies. You know, we're running our electricity at 60 hertz over here in the United States. And over in your area, you're probably going at 50 hertz. That's a frequency range at which that energy is pulsing through there and got the electron flow going, and so on and so forth. But the terminology and all that kind of stuff and big egos and stuff out there in the alternative energy community, I've discussed every single device under the sun that I know of, and I keep on finding more. But trying to bring all these individuals to the table, it's like pulling teeth. You there, Steve?
I am.
Yeah. What do you think,
man? I was on mute. Well, I reckon we've got more chance of finding free energy than we have weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah. We'll probably
because they've got the receipts and they know where they are.
We'll probably even get pictures of it. This goes.
I'd give you good odds on that if you want to run a book on us getting free energy before we get weapons of mass destruction out of the Middle East.
Well, I've been told I repeat myself over and over again, and it's the same old thing every Saturday show or whatever, but maybe it is. I don't know. All I know is this. We should be so much further advanced technology-wise. We shouldn't be hearing all this stuff about, you know, global warming, carbon tax, and all that kind of stuff, because we have the technology. We have had the technology all along. But yet...
Can I just interject there for a second?
Go ahead.
There's a lot of people joining the search for free energy and just a general interest on what we can and can't do with the facilities required to us. And if people are saying that you're repeating the stuff over and over again, you have to remember, as you said, this is a platform for attempting to disseminate the information that we've gathered in the community. And there are so many new people joining us all the time. They probably haven't heard this before.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes it has to be repeated over, you know? I mean, for Pete's sake, man, there's been generators built back in the 1700s, you know? The Hawksby device. Man, I'm having trouble breathing over here.
Well, look at the beam engines that they use to grind grain to make flour with. And that goes back to the 1600s through a mill pond. It was a beam engine.
Well, that's the thing, you know. If there's really a serious problem about we're polluting our planet and all this kind of stuff, then why not step away from the old style, what we're doing here with the way we generate electricity today, you know, and build some of these things. I mean, 1992, they're driving around in trucks with Stirling engines. They said, used less fuel, got better mileage, and had cleaner combustion out of the deal.
Oh, but we can't have that, can we?
No, and that's the whole thing, man. And it's going to take the average Joe to do it. I mean, we're just going to have to, as community, decide we want to do it. And, you know, listen to some of these individuals out protesting, man. You'd swear they'd never had opened a school book in their life. I mean, they can repeat like a mockingbird the liberal points of view of life. You know, we got to save the polar bears. We got to do this, whatever, you know. But they and all they're talking about saving the planet, you never hear any solutions. Nothing. You know? We got solar...
Well, this.
Yeah?
How do you make people feel guilty for their existence if they have clean, effective combustion systems for transportation, for energy requirements? I mean, it's really difficult to make people feel guilty if you actually give them something that works. And we're not the people that design and mass manufacture the devices available to us.
Well, it's kind of like, Al Sharpton, it shows up at every deal and calls it a riot and a racial issue, you know? If there ain't no race riot going on, then he's out of business. And that's the key. This is what all of them want. They want to be in business. And so every time we talk about that, you know, we get little turkeys that come on there trolling us and calling us everything under the sun, you know, and it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm sitting here telling the world, if you want free energy, let's just do it, you know. Let's get some folks together, you know. I've never asked for donations on my radio station, except for one occasion, and that was I was trying to make a dream happen for my uncle who was going through a tough time, getting him a train, you know. But and that didn't even pan out. I raised like $20. And so I ended up doing it myself anyway. But regardless, there's a lot of people out there doing GoFundMe accounts, you know, for a lot of different deals. And what have they got with it? Seriously, I mean, is there a free energy device out there right now that has been produced by one of these GoFundMe accounts that, you know, everybody's paid for, that, you know, it just hasn't hit the market yet or what? I don't know.
Well, I mean, there's a variety of different variations and inclinations of people to try and fund good ideas. But, you know, I talked to one of the senior financial people in Singapore. I mean, this guy is multi-million megabucks. And he said, is it worth your time, effort and intellect? And that's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. What you're putting your energies into, are they worth your time, effort and intellect?
Well, personally, I don't know. You know, I think it's worth my time to... it's a personal issue for me, being the power company. I mean...
Yeah.
But I think it's worth the effort because, you know, if it pulls a few extra dollars back into the wallets of all the people out there that have to pay high electric bills, if it results in less regulations over, you know, what you can get your power from, like for Pete's sake, they're trying to tax solar power, trying to tax the wind, trying to tax the water, you know, and tax everything. You know, everything that nature, you know, our creator gave us, that's it. You know, they want to tax it. They want total control over everything. And it's aggravating. Because the average Joe, if you're paying a $1,700 light bill, or, you know, over here in the States, I got, you know, my lowest light bill has probably been about $300 or $400, you know. And I can remember...
Well, seriously, Shazitz. If 2/3 of the world's surface is covered in a combination of hydrogen and oxygen linked with carbon chains, it's called water.
Yeah.
And we can put people on the moon, we can put rovers on Mars. You know, we can land something on a
foreign body?
Yeah, I mean, they can land probes on comets flying through space.
But yeah, we can't. But
we're paying for the fundamental requirement for healthy human existence.
There's a person out here on Skype, Darren. He sent me a link to Tesla Powerwall. There's a generating system that some folks have put together, and it's a big giant battery bank. And yeah, I mean, I've been saying it all along. You can store the power. You can use the power. It doesn't matter, but all of it's out there, man. It's been out there all along. Battery technology must have been amazing back in the 60s, because if they went to the moon and had to power up that suit with heating and cooling and life support and all that kind of stuff, lighting and whatever, it must have been some really good batteries back in the 60s. Now, why couldn't we use those batteries now? I mean, seriously, you got a solar panel...
To finish the thought I was making about water, the reason why we're paying for water at the minute is not because there's any lack of it.
Yeah.
It's because it's the best way to control us.
Well, and that's the thing. The average Joe's going to have to just up and decide, look, you know, my grandpa used to have his phrase. He says, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself. You know, you can't get nobody to do it. I'm trying to get everybody to come to the table. Let's do this together, because there's people out there with skill sets that I don't have that combined with mine, you know, it's a done deal. Then you open source the information, you pass it around to the planet, it's a done deal. And, you know, you don't have to worry about corporations stealing it. You know, that's the key. There's got to be some... There's got to be some inventions out there that people use today that nobody ever made any money off of. You know what I mean?
I mean, the claim that all these utility companies are stealing it. No, they're not. The people that we elect to represent us are giving it to them.
Yeah.
And we're being told that, oh, we're evil, we're nasty, we're terrible because we're killing polar bears, because we buy what governments approve for manufacture.
Yeah. Food and Drug Administration.
How stupid do these people think we truly are?
Food and Drug Administration. They put all these pills out there on the market and say, these are good, and then they list off all the possible side effects, not excluding death. But you can't have alternative medicine on there because, you know, that goes against somebody's wallet.
And well, it's not approved, is it?
No, and that's the thing.
Approval costs money.
And everybody wonders why I call it mad science. You know, I have to repeat myself because I feel like I'm, I know for the most part I'm preaching to the choir, And I'm hoping the message will get out there far enough that I don't care if it's a third world country and they want the idea, I'll give it to them for free. And if there's any way I can assist them in building it, I don't care who gets it. I just want the world to get it. It's that simple. You know, I'm not in this to get rich. If I was, I failed. And if I was in it to get famous, I failed. All I want is for people to be able to know that everything around them is energy. It doesn't matter what it is. You can use anything for fuel. You can pull energy right out of doggone air, for Pete's sake. I mean, it's in there. Oxygen burns.
Oxygen is hugely destructive.
Yeah. So, if you can pull energy right out of the air, and there's all kinds of radio frequencies, not just from Earth itself, but from space, you know, and energy waves all over. You got wind power, you got water power, solar, it's everywhere. And here we are, the year 2015, we're still having this discussion about the whole global warming / climate change / climate disruption and whatever they're going to name it next time when they get caught when it snows, when they said it's supposed to be warming up or whatever. You know,
you know what gives me hope? Irish farmer once said to me that his great-grandfather had dug a well on their land 150 years ago, and he'll start paying a water tax when God sends him an invoice.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He said that well has been there long before even the state was considered independent from British rule. He said, I don't owe anybody anything to put,
and that's
a glass of water on my kitchen table. I've been feeding this country for 150 years.
That's the key.
My family have been feeding the country. I mean, we've paid our dues and debts.
We need more people thinking like that. Exactly. You know?
You know, what services and facilities and quality of life are they providing me for the regulations and rules that they're trying to implement upon me? Was kind of what he was saying in more flowery words. But
yeah.
That's basically the gist of it. You come up with these new ideas, you come up with these rules, these regulations, but who do they serve?
Well, one of the keys that you just said was new ideas, and the thing about it is none of these are new ideas. They've all been around. Digging your own well, that's not a new idea. I mean, they've done it for years. But
I mean, these guys 150 years ago did not have somebody with a hydraulic drill that could come in, mount up a portable rig, and go boom, boom, boom over a couple of days, and hey presto, you've got a well.
Yep.
You know, it was dug by hand.
Yeah, and they lined them with bricks.
Yeah. I mean, this idea that you have to pay somebody ridiculously large sums of money to come and drill it for you doesn't mean to say you can't do it yourself.
That's the key, man. And that's the whole thing. If we're ever to get free energy out there to the people, it's going to be the people getting it. I mean, it's there. I've already proven free energy over and over and over again. And so, you know, with that said, I ain't never even one time ever said that I was looking for over unity or 0 point. All I'm talking about is tapping into what nature's already provided. It's as simple as that. How you want to do it. I mean, you can put a water wheel in the creek. You could put a water paddle out in the ocean and catch the tides. You can grab the wind. You can grab the sunlight and grab the air. It doesn't matter. It's any direction. Take your pick. You're sitting at a buffet of all kinds of potential devices that could run your entire house and cities for that matter.
That'd be kind of cool, actually, wouldn't it? An all-you-can-eat free energy device.
Yeah.
You know, you buy your equipment, you get it set up, and it's like a never-ending buffet. Just take what you need.
Yeah, that's it. And whatever you don't use, let your neighbor have it. Heck, man, is that easy?
No, you couldn't do that. You couldn't do that, should it?
That'd be too nice?
Well, no, it'd be fundamental against the concept of commercialism and capitalism, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's like,
I mean, the way society is structured is, I've got mine, so I'm okay. The fact that you might share your excess with your neighbour doesn't really work, because if you do, then, oh, well, why aren't they producing their own?
They want to fine people and throw them in jail for growing gardens and selling the food.
Oh, that is such an evil thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
The fundamental act of... I'm not particularly religiously inclined, but I do believe that there are fundamental concepts that people should embrace, such as Christian charity.
Yeah.
Now, that's not necessarily giving stuff away because you're superior to someone else, but because you have an abundance and you have more than you need.
That's the whole thing. My father-in-law, he lives out in the country. He's a farmer, and he's surrounded by other farmers and neighbors, and they are never short on food because what he grows, he shares with his neighbors, and they do the same. They always have a freezer full. They never have that problem. And if the modern-day society...
What do people in rural agricultural areas do to make sure their freezers don't die when the power goes out?
Well, a lot of them have learned how to bury the doggone thing so that if it does go out, they buy themselves a whole lot of time, because back in the old days, the only thing they had for a refrigerator was an ice block or a root cellar. And so whenever they put the freezers, they'll bury them in the ground.
And what are the negative consequences of having a root cellar, apart from just general architectural principles?
Well, if you don't do it nicely, it'll be an eyesore, but other than that, you can store canned foods. They've been canning foods for years, and those canned foods will last for years. And so, they store tons of food up inside there for worst-case scenario in the wintertime. Farmers, they got to eat during the wintertime, too, so they stock up during the summer, and they don't go shopping like we go shopping at the grocery store. They don't have to. They've got it all right there. Their neighbors have provided stuff. They've got together and canned foods together. They went hunting and stored up meat for the wintertime. And, what do you think they did back in the old days, the old wagon train days, or before that? What did the Indians do? They stored up food. They learned how to preserve stuff,
They developed the 7-Eleven chain of convenience stores.
Yeah. Well, nowadays, that's why the majority of the population is in such jeopardy if worst-case scenario ever comes about, because they don't know how to do that stuff. And
before soapy liberals turn around and accuse me of making racist comments, I grew up with a lot of Indian people, Sikhs, Muslims, Hindus. They ran corner shop convenience stores because it was a business where you had regular income, and it was actually a value to society.
Really?
Now, when friends of mine came to England in the 1960s, which was before I was born, all of the family worked together, took low wages, they didn't have any big fancy cars, and they didn't have nice big houses. But they came together as a family, worked all the hours under the sun to develop enough revenue to be able to build a business structure that would support the family unit. This is something we can learn from, because we've been taught this idea that we should be in individualized family communities. When your kids get to a certain age, kick them out. Send them off into the world to make their own way. Well, that seems to be a very English culture from my perspective. But there's a lot of other places in the world where that's just not acceptable. The family unit is strong as a family. The family unit is not strong when it's pushed out and diversified, and people at a young age are left to fend for themselves.
Well, we could learn a lot from the past, man. The way that people survived back in the day... The fact we're just even having this conversation, it drives me insane, because we got everything we need to literally give everybody on the planet everything that they need. It's as simple as that.
The nation of America was founded on the fact that other people supported them in their time of need. Called Thanksgiving.
Well, here's the whole key to that. What happens whenever it all falls apart? What happens when the man ain't sending the money anymore? Seriously. And so people sit here and they talk about all kinds of different, you know, martial law scenarios, the government putting up an army. Well, you're standing there and you're allowing yourself to be had, because if you are worried about the future, I mean, people laugh at the preppers, but at least they got a plan. You know, what do you do if the power grid goes down? Well, I've been telling everybody what to do if the power grid goes down. There's all kinds of things laying around you that you probably throw in the trash that you could build a generator out of. Is it going to be as fancy as what the power company sends down the wire? Depends on how much you want to put to it. But, you know, it's not like it can't be done. It's just a matter of most folks don't know how to do it. And when they do know how to do it, they just don't do it. You know, because it's too easy just to walk over there right now and flip the switch on the wall and get electricity. You know, plug it in. That's what it is. They have become so reliant on this raggedy old power grid that just the thought of trying to do it themselves, it's scary, you know.
Well, they say that necessity is the mother of all invention.
Yep.
And humanity seems to be incredibly flexible in times of crisis. I wonder if some of these crises are invented to try and push humanity along that path of evolution.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, as much as I hate to say it, it would probably be a blessing if the power grid went down. It really would. Because then you're, like you said, people would be forced to do something. You know, they're either going to destroy each other or they're going to work together.
The potential and opportunity for a mass coronal ejection to spray hot solar winds across the surface of the planet, knock out our communication systems, knock out our energy systems, might sound a bit random and unlikely, but it happened in the 1800s.
Yeah, it did, and it started fires. It also shocked the crud out of people when that surge came down through the telegraph wires to people. You know, and so it's not like it hasn't happened before. So it can and probably will happen again. So we're talking about, you know, hey, if you're going to want to have electricity, if the power goes off, I mean, out here in wintertime, prime example, I have a house that's all electric, and if the power goes off, the heat goes off. And so I installed a wood-burning stove for just such an emergency.
You carbon criminal, you're killing polar bears out there, you damn you, sir.
Yeah, I know, huh? Think I might have to go out there and start a tire fire as well, so that people can see, you know, the black plume coming from my house.
Oh, it's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, people have been burning stuff in their homes for millennia.
Well, who are they going to send the bill to for all the volcanoes been popping off here recently? Because there's a lot of carbon coming up out of that.
Oh, well, we don't mention that, should we?
That's not
approved research, so it doesn't count.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah. If it's not approved, it doesn't exist, and it's a conspiracy theory, and the person that's saying it must have a tinfoil out at home somewhere he puts on when he gets in.
Well, I got a tinfoil crown, man. I do. I actually did a video about... what the heck was the name of that? King Tinfoil Responds, where somebody told me I should put a tinfoil hat on my cat.
Yeah, but cats, they're kind of, they're partway between, like, the real world and the spirit world, if it exists. They seem to be somewhere in the middle, so they, you know, you can't put a tinfoil hat on your cat, because that's got ways of communicating we just don't understand anyway.
Yeah, and when I did put a tinfoil hat on my cat, the cat was not amused. You could tell by the look on that cat's face what he was thinking.
You do realize that if you attack Doctor Zeus, there's going to be children all over the planet that are incredibly unhappy with you.
Yep.
Anyway, we're getting off the point here, but I mean, what's the subject of tonight's show? It's kind of about, there are people in the past that have come up with inventions that are surrounded by mystery, by adversity, I guess.
Well, just the links that I posted in the chat room there, you got magnetic levitation, you got a heat engine, You got a water engine. There are so many different ways in order to actually produce a clean energy generator that it's just mind-boggling. And so I'm sitting here and my brain's working overtime trying to think of the easiest device to put out there to prove it once and for all. And the static engine is the easiest one that I can figure out, because static is the most prevalent around. You know, the Earth is one big massive thermoelectric generator of epic proportions, and you can get static energy just by rubbing your feet on the carpet. So, you know, with that said, I'm working on some deals on that, which will also lead into plasma technology and basically a super tuner of frequencies. That's what I'm working on as far as the plasma goes. You know, anybody could build a Tesla coil and shoot sparks out of the top. All right, that's cool. All right, you know, hey, but after you've seen it the first trillion and a half times, it's not so cool. What you want to show me that I will think is cool is what you're going to do with all that wasted energy you just pumped out of the top load of that coil. I mean, if you took that top load of that coil and you encased it in something that looked resemblance to a mercury arc rectifier, instead of using mercury, use argon inside there and build a plasma reactor that now you're taking all that excess energy and building one massive rectifier that you can pump all the high voltage DC you want into capacitor banks and then run your house off of it. People keep asking me, can I run my house off of it? Well, as it stands, no, you can't, because it's all going up into the air. But instead of sending it all up into the air, why don't you use it, put it inside a chamber, and send that energy down the line and then use it? I mean, they want an answer, and I've been giving them the answer for God knows how many years now. I've been pointing it out to them, been showing them things like little bitty bulb starters, for fluorescent bulb starters. They're full of argon, and you can wirelessly turn it into plasma. That ought to be one heck of a red flag there. Hey, like, pay attention to that. There's an anomaly there. Plasma is amazing, because you can fit trillions and trillions and trillions of electrons in one tiny space, and it gets into the fourth state of matter. You're not talking about your conventional energy anymore. But what you are talking about is one massive tuner that all you got to do is turn up and turn down the volume of what you got going in, or adjust your spark gap, and you can literally change the frequency on demand on that. So you could build a plasma reactor that would literally separate hydrogen on demand as fast as you could use the hydrogen. It wouldn't matter how many people are using it. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. This, how difficult would it be to have something like a multimeter connected up to a spark gap with either a mechanical or electrically operated spark gap adjuster, so as your load goes on it modifies the spark gap to basically provide the level of energy that you need? I mean, how difficult would that actually be to create?
It wouldn't be difficult at all. You know, even going across that spark gap, you got a massive amount of energy. You know, I got this barbecue grill at the auction and it was kind of in pieces, and so I bring it home. It's a propane barbecue grill.
Oh yeah, they're good there.
And so I got it back together and the igniter wasn't working, so I took the igniter off of it and I got a piezoelectric igniter for it. But I was tinkering around with the igniter, and the only reason why it wasn't working because there was some crud over the terminals inside there where some bug had tried to build a nest inside the little deal there. But all that was is a 1.5 volt battery, a penlight battery, a AAA battery, is what shoots the spark through a little igniter coil that ignites the fuel. And I was sitting there playing around with this thing, and it is literally just like one of them handheld tasers, but it only works off of 1.5 volts. You're taking 1.5 volts, running it through a transformer, and getting high voltage out the other end.
Well, Shazuz, have you ever taken apart a electric cigarette lighter?
Yeah, I did quite some time ago, but the parts inside there are so doggone small.
Well, think about it. How much spark do you actually need to combust a flame?
Not very much.
An electric lighter is enough to start a gas barbecue grill as well.
Yep. And
if people are wondering how these things work, go and spend $1 on a cigarette lighter and take the thing apart. I mean, be careful, obviously, because it's combustible gases. But don't be afraid to investigate. Go and have a look at stuff. Find out how it works. And, you know, if you get a really big hammer and you get annoyed, you can hit it with it as well, and that makes you feel good.
Well, after I took this thing off, I got it in my lab over there. I was lighting up fluorescent bulbs with it. And to most folks, lighting up a fluorescent bulb isn't that impressive. You know, you've seen it once, you've seen it a million times. It's not that impressive. But it is impressive because there's something going on inside there. When you want to go back to talk about Stan Myers and how he was able to get hydrogen on demand, he was using a frequency to do it. To energize that gas inside that bulb, you need some sort of high frequency in order to do it. And it was coming off of a 1.5 volt battery. I was able to light up a fluorescent bulb by energizing that gas inside there. And so the potential of that in itself is mind-boggling. And if you could get all these individuals out here who are interested in free energy to stop arguing about who's doing what and whatever, and just pay attention to the anomalies, and even the devices that don't work right, there was something that they started doing that they felt like it was important enough to follow through and to build that device. And even though it's not free energy or over unity or 0 point or whatever, there was a scientific little deal inside there, just like the pop boat and all the other little toys back in the days that had science to them. There is a piece of science in there that is a missing piece of the puzzle that you can expand on. And we could, in less than 30 days, if I could get the right crew and the right tools together, we could build a device. And if anybody out there wants to fund such an adventure and do that, then, you know, let me know. Because I know it can be done. I've seen the work that Muddy's done with his actual flux wind turbine. I know the science behind that. I know why he's able to get more magnetic flux out of his than the standard ones out the factories or whatever. There are ways to get your solar panels to be more efficient. There's ways to collect static energy. It is super simple to create plasma. There are so many different methods by which to tap into the energy that is around us. That's not even remotely funny. Now, there's a Keshi Foundation out there. These guys at the Keshi Foundation, they got millions of dollars to work with. And yet they still haven't put a device on the table for everybody. And it wouldn't take millions of dollars to do what we're talking about. But he's in it to make him some money out the deal, and on the other side, we're going to have him some money. But if you really cared about society as a whole, third world countries and such, solving the energy crisis that doesn't exist, if you really cared about that, it would be open source, free to whoever wants to build it, and it would be done by now. That man's smart enough to know what I'm saying. He's smart enough to be able to con everybody into giving him thousands of dollars for lectures. I mean, he gets $20,000 a pops, what I understand. For every lecture that he does, he gets $20,000. You put $20,000 in my hand for a project, and in less than 30 days, that doggone thing's going to be done. Period. It without a doubt, it will be. You will be able to have a physical device in your hand, and it will function just as I said it will.
I can put 100,000 Indonesian rupiah in your hand, mate, but I don't can't get you very far because it's about $10.
Hey, I think that we could literally build one under $100. It's that simple. But what it's going to take is it's going to take somebody who has a machine shop, a plasma cutter that can cut some precision parts, and not make it out of junk baling wire and duct tape and electrical tape and hot glue and stuff like that, you know? You're not going to run your house off of hot glue. Unless you use it for fuel.
Yeah.
But the key is, I'm trying to bring people together. That's what this platform's about. And so instead of people coming out here criticizing and walking away all in a huff because they didn't have their word or whatever, you've got an idea, lay it on the table. The table is out there. Nobody has a stop sign up that says you can't come on here and talk. All you got to do is just not be a foul-mouthed heathen and offend everybody and his brother to try to get your point across.
Well, the question I have to ask myself is, do I have the intellect and capacity to be able to invent something that's usable and relevant to society?
Well, brother, look, I've talked to you long enough to know that you got a lot of information in the gardening sector, all right? With the information that you got, and you can tell me what it is that you need, like you were talking about the light bulbs. I still need to get some of them light bulbs so that I can see if I can light them up and get the right spectrums out of them for you. But if you need this specific light bulb to grow plants, and I can develop a power source that doesn't require mains power in order to run this said light bulb for days on end without having to ever worry about putting anything into it, then your knowledge and my knowledge combined just did something amazing for humanity. Because, you know, worst case scenario, volcanoes pop up and the clouds are all up in the sky and you can't grow no plants. You're going to need to know somehow some way to grow plants inside in order to sustain until the sky clears up again.
Buddy, my experiments have restarted. You know, I moved to a unspecified location somewhere within Asia.
Yep.
Well, I have a bomb shelter in my apartment. It's about 10 foot long by probably about 6 foot wide. Well, maybe 8 foot by 6 foot. And I've racking systems inside it. There is an internal plug socket, and I'm currently testing to work out exactly how many seedlings I can bring to the point of planting under 60 watts of artificial light using 13 watt T5 fluorescent strips at 4000 kelvins.
Cool.
So over the next couple of months, I've got a setup where I can photograph it at exactly the same time, twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening. Because it's under artificial light, it's going to be running for 18 hours a day. I'm about, maybe 100 miles north of the equator. So we don't have 18 hours of light a day here. So trying to grow the sort of food that I like to cook with, I'm under kind of pressure because I don't have that spring, summer, autumn, winter, four season structure to be able to grow with. But that does not mean to say that you cannot artificially create it. And back in Europe, I was able to manage to grow to the point of planting 160 seedlings in an 85 litre box using 60 watts of power.
They're talking about going to Mars. It takes 6 months to get to Mars. And you'd have to pack a lot of groceries for 6 months to get to Mars, according to their plan. That's how long it takes to get there. I think we can get there in less than a minute. But that's,
well, yeah, mate. I mean, if you pitch up down the front door of Area 51, Groom Lake facility, whatever you want to call it, and you don't get your head blown off by some redneck that's just come off his latest dose of steroids, you can just go through their matter transmitter.
Yeah.
We have access to travel that is way beyond most people's comprehension. And if you think that I'm making it up, go and ask your redneck cousin that was guarding an elevator down there.
Well, I'll tell you one thing's for sure, man. People want to talk about teleportation. We're teleporting audio signals to and fro. There ain't no difference between that audio signal than the human being itself. You are energy. It doesn't matter how you want to look at it. The problem is they don't want to end up inside a tree. And so the research is there. I mean, the science is there. It is 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, provable science.
But how long did it take to get from Star Trek Next Generation iPad? Like a 10 by 15 inch portable display screen where you could just sit there and type on it with your fingers. How long did that take from the imagination of TV producers to become reality in most people's homes? I sit on a bus in 2015 looking at somebody using something that was in Star Trek in 95 and 96.
Yep, and actually I was watching a... It was kind of ironic too, because I was watching a show they call Pawn Stars or whatever, and basically it's a pawn shop. But a old TV watch came in, an analog TV watch, a wrist watch, all right, and it had a little cord that goes up your sleeve, and then a thing that plugs onto your shoulder, and that was back in the 80s when they had that. When it first came out, it was like a couple thousand dollars to buy. Now, the guy only got like $150 out of it, because you can't even really watch TV unless you plug some sort of DVD player into it or whatever. But either way, that technology goes all the way back to the old Dick Tracy, where Dick Tracy was sitting here looking at a screen on his wrist and talking to people. But now you got a cell phone technology. They got watches that basically do the same doggone thing. So life does imitate art. We should be so much further advanced, but the key to this, folks, is this. You know, all this information, to give it all to you right now, is freedom for you, and no money for them. If these guys want to make money, I mean, they put an iPad out for Pete's sake, or a laptop that has no camera in it, all right? They already have technology to put a camera in it. But they want to sell that one to you for $600 or $800, and then a couple months later say, look, the iPad 2's out here. It's got a camera in there. Seriously? Another $600.
Well, Chaziz, the reason why they're charging you $600 for this device without a camera in it is because if it doesn't have a camera in it, then it cannot be remotely turned on.
Well, either way, they're still, you know, hey... Get one now without a camera, and then you find out later, I could have got one with a camera. They do that kind of stuff, you know, to make more money, you know. The improvement was probably out the same exact time that the one that you bought.
Shaziz, is kind of, from my perspective, the reason why they're making this device without a camera and a microphone in it is because there's a lot of people out there that have actually clocked on to the fact that you do not control the hardware in the devices that you are purchasing, and they can be used by various groups who have access to the technology to turn this stuff on through the back door.
Oh, I'm sure of that. But
so effectively what you're doing is you're paying a premium rate for your privacy. And most people do not understand what that excessive rate is for. A lot of corporations won't allow you to bring a mobile phone with a camera device in it into the office.
Either way,
because they know what they do, and they know who's doing it.
Yeah. Either way, it all falls back to power and money. You know, hey, if you don't care about what somebody's got to say, why spy on them? You know, and you know, if you want to know what people buy and what they're interested in, so you could market to them and create the internet as a big giant advertisement campaign and have a great user agreement that says pretty much we can spy on you and you're okay with that just for you using our free software. Nobody ever reads it. They just click on I agree, and so they probably gave away their firstborn or something like that, you know.
Well, I was seriously considering replacing all of the pockets in all of my trousers and shorts with clear plastic, and then making sure that every time I put my phone in the pocket that's got a camera on it, it's facing kind of in towards my leg. So if they want to turn that camera on, that's the view they're going to get. I'm sorry, but kind of hot here. You go commando a lot.
Yeah. See, we have everything we need. The only thing is we don't have the willpower to use it. It's as simple as that. We say we take a quick music break.
Yeah. Well, just before we go to this, what about the willpower not to use it?
Well, there you go. That's another thing.
If people are using technology that has been specifically designed to give them a record someplace, somewhere, that's accessible by people that don't necessarily have your interest at heart, then don't use it.
Yeah, and that's it. That's the whole deal, man. If you think you can't do it, then chances are you're not going to be able to do it. And if you're waiting around for the government to solve the whole so-called energy crisis, keep watching your tax papers, you know, because your taxes keep going up and the problem never gets resolved. And that's why I call it mad science. So everybody stay tuned. We're going to play a quick music break and refresh our coffee. So peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
And we're back. You're listening to Mad Science with Shaziz and Steve here. You know, we've been over this and over it forever and a day. It's it's aggravating to me because we should already have devices out there that people can put in their houses and run all their appliances and such. You know, energy's free. I don't care what anybody out there. I'll argue till I'm blue in the face, and I'll prove it before it's all said and done. I have a device ready for the world, you know, and put it out there open source. But once again, it all falls back to manufacturing, you know. If it isn't precise, it's going to wobble and it's going to have losses. And if you're putting it together with duct tape and baling wire, then that's what you got. And so I tried to bring a crew together called a Dream Team, and I wanted everybody to come together. We all figure out a mid-place to meet and just build it, for Pete's sake. It doesn't matter which one of these devices, because even the ones that don't work, we can troubleshoot and get them to work. It's that simple. But the simple, the hard part of this whole deal isn't the fact that we don't have the knowledge already. It isn't the fact that we ain't capable financially or physically to do this. We have everything we need. Every single piece of the puzzle is there. And what are we getting done? You got any thoughts on that, Steve?
Well, I mean, it's all news about questions, isn't it? I mean, I was commenting earlier before that if you see a piece of technology that looks kind of cool, but actually is there to basically track, trace, and database you. I mean, people frequently say to me, oh, well, I've done nothing wrong. Well, what if they're track, tracing, and databasing your every move, activity, thought, comment, to find out what's detrimental to their personal interests and the interests of the people that are paying a lot of money to make sure that we don't get what we need.
Yeah, there's...
I have a happy, healthy lifestyle. Well, is it really necessary to do that? And the question is what's more valuable to you? For you to have everything you need in a nice warm house with your root cellar or what refrigeration device or whatever we need to be able to store food that's safe for consumption for long periods of time, well, if everybody else is starving and trying to kick your door in to get access to your stuff, or for everybody to be on a level playing field so nobody suffers and nobody is a threat to each other because everybody has what they need.
Oh, see, that's brilliant. That's what I've been trying to say all along. Just didn't have the right words to say it. Thanks, man. I mean, look, if you put all this information out there where everybody knows how to use it, and then those who really can't do it themselves, you go over there and you help them set it up or whatever, and when something does go wrong, then you ain't got no reason to go have worry about people kicking your door down. You still have an infrastructure, a backup system. You know, people go out and buy insurance all day long. They'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars making other people rich on the off chance that they might have an automobile accident or croak or whatever, that somebody's going to get paid. And when it comes down to infrastructures, they're sitting here talking about how our power grid is a raggedy old bunch of wires and poles that are, basically jerry-rigged together in order to function and are, weak enough that somebody could blow out the power anytime. Or solar wind or whatever blows out the power. And we don't have a second infrastructure. The second infrastructure for you personally is what you got on your own property. and all the regulations put in places, they don't want you to have that infrastructure. You have to be in need of them. You have to need their services, whether it be the governmental services or the protection of the army or the police or whatever. You have to be reliant on them. Otherwise, they don't have the power over you. You know, it's as simple as that. They're going to spy on you through your own stuff, and you're going to allow it just for the luxury of having what you need provided for you. But if the day ever comes and you don't have what they provide for you, can you fend for yourself? That's the question.
Well, Shaziz, when I lived in Ireland, I was running various different experiments over a period of time. Everything from hydrogen generation to making solar panels out of titanium oxide powder and raspberry juice. I can glue the raspberries to make it with. And my neighbour said to me, oh, if the power goes out, you'll be the only guy in this street with electricity. And I said, oh God, that would be the last thing I want. he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, moths are drawn to a flame.
Well, I tell everybody,
when the power did go out, I wasn't the only guy in the street with electricity, because I threw an extension cable on either side. And my two neighbours, who both have young children, had their refrigerators running, as well as were able to boil a kettle and provide hot water for their children.
There you go. And that's the way it's going to have to be. You know, build a power grid and help your neighbour out.
That was based on a small petrol-based generator with a hydrogen feed in it to extend its fuel economy and efficiency by 50%. And it was made out of beer cans. A hydrogen generator made out of beer cans that was piped straight into the carburetor of a small petrol generator, and it extended the fuel capacity of that by nearly 50%.
I have a friend who's been living off the grid for a year now, and he is living off the grid because he got in a fight with a power company who tried to steal from him, and so he just said to heck with it. He started running gasoline generators at first, and it cost him out the eyeball to keep fuel going. And he just flat out refused to go back on the power grid. Well, now he's got a really big diesel generator that puts out, I can't even remember how many, it's quite a few kilovolts. But he ain't paying for fuel. That's the key. What he's doing is he's going around to all the shops, and they got dirty waste oil that they done oil changes on cars, and they have to get rid of it. They actually pay to get rid of it, to have people haul it off, because it's considered by the EPA, you know, toxic waste or whatever. He gets to buy the 50-gallon barrel for free, and that's what he's running these diesel generators on. So,
Europe, the wisdom of the European Union is that they've now provided directives and legislation that mean that fast food stores that use a lot of oil have to prove that they've disposed of their waste oil through authorized contractors that come and take it away. You can no longer go to something like a chip shop or a burger bar and get their waste oil for fuel purposes, because they will be fined if they cannot prove how they disposed of it.
Yeah, that just figured, doesn't it?
Now, you tell me who is the enemy of the state.
I say the state is the enemy of the state, and the people are allowing them, these morons, to run the doggone show. You know,
I mean, when they say state, do they mean a good state or a poor state?
I'm tired of people telling us what can't be done. All right? What I want to know is what can be done. And I know one thing can be done. I can build up a static charge by rubbing my shoes on the carpet. And that's energy. You know?
Do you think you would be imprisoned for 10 years? Is if you stood in the doorway, rubbed your feet on a carpet, and then touched Hillary Clinton on the side of the face when you walked through?
Probably. Probably she gets shot by her bodyguards.
Yeah, but would that considered to be an attack on someone?
Hey. The whole thing.
It, It wasn't me, it was God. God created
the Yeah, it was the act of God. You can't blame me. I didn't know. The whole thing is, man.
She shook the hat, you know, but.
Some folks out there, they think they're smarter than they are. And for all their education, they still haven't got anything to show for what they're talking about. And I sit around, I listen to people quote the laws of physics to me over and over and over again, and I'm sitting here trying to tell them, look, what I'm talking about, I'm not talking about defying any laws of physics. I'm not talking about getting over unity or zero point. I'm not talking about getting out more than I'm putting in. But when the wind blows, and I can tap into that energy and not do anything to it and charge batteries up, that to me is free energy. I put a solar panel out. I've had solar panels around my doggone house for I don't know how many years, and I don't pay for my lighting over my lab. All right, it's that simple. And I don't have a massive solar array. I've got one brand new set that's still in the box. I haven't even used it. There's a 45-watt panel out there that's charging up a massive battery bank, and that's all I needed. I didn't have to go out and spend thousands and thousands of dollars in order to charge up batteries. Wasn't necessary. For what I use the lights in there for, I got more than enough. And so it's as simple as that. But, you know, I get people coming in here telling me what can't be done. I don't care what can't be done, but I know what can be done. And it's what can be done that we should be doing. We should be having everybody together working on things. You know, there's guys out there, and I've mentioned all these different friends from the alternative energy community. Ryan out there, Abrams Lab, he's doing some really amazing things. He's getting some really cool results. They got a motor called NEX-13 that came out of air conditioner units or something, you know. And they, when they go bad because of one little part in there, they just throw them away. Those things right there are putting out some pretty amazing generating juice and stuff. And there are pumps, water pumps that can go, electric water pumps that go inside of washing machines. These things are getting amazing results out of. That's that Gerard Morin guy that's doing research on that. He's the one that took the two transformers and was showing how to get more energy out. And so, all we're talking about is everything that's out there is already available to you. I mean, the stator motors inside washing machines, those are generators. Any permanent magnet motor out there is a generator. You know, everybody's out there looking for the tooth fairy or the holy grail of electricity, over unity, zero point, all that kind of stuff. You know, why don't we just talk about something that you can do? If you need electricity, you need to charge batteries up or capacitor banks or whatever. It's as simple as doing it. It's that simple. Inverter technology out there is amazing. You know, all you need is the power to run it. And if you've got a 12-volt battery and you can keep 12 volts in that doggone battery, then you can run your inverter. And depending on how much of an energy hog you are, will depend on how big of an inverter you need. But as far as generator systems, you know, I don't want to sit around and argue with people over the laws of physics and what can and can't be done or what the terminology is and isn't. I want to talk about putting physical devices out there in third world countries that will literally generate electricity to pump water for them and help them irrigate and do the things that they need to do. The power companies could have solved this hundreds of years ago. The government could have solved it hundreds of years ago, but they're not interested.
Are we assuming they haven't solved this?
Well, sure they have. They've gone in space, for Pete's sake, according to them. I mean, but NASA goes all the way to Mars and takes the crappiest camera with them? Come on.
Yeah, well, it's kind of difficult to swallow, isn't it? That you're going to have the capacity and intellect and ability to be able to put something way outside the orbit of our own sun.
Yeah.
When you get there, you've got something that looks like it came off a 1990s mobile phone.
Yeah.
Seriously, guys.
Get a doggone Polaroid camera and a homing pigeon with a spacesuit to bring back the picture or something, you know?
That's why there's no carrier pigeons left. Because the last one effectively died out in 1914. Because they sent them all to Mars to take pictures for us.
You know, we've done I've done videos on Earth batteries. The Earth battery technology out there is as simple as building a battery is two different metals in the dirt will produce a charge. Now, a lot of the ways that are done only show up in the millivolt range, but you can charge up capacitors and actually get up into the volt range. But it's not something that can't be done on a massive scale. You could literally scale anything up. You know, if you got tons of land and you bury different materials, certain parts of the land, depending on the consistency of the chemistry in your dirt, will depend on how, for one, you'll get the chemical battery reaction, you'll get the galvanic reaction, and, you know, if it rains, that's just going to help you even more.
Well, Shaziz, is the Voyager probes... Are the Voyager probes still sending signals?
Heck, I don't know. All I know is that whenever NASA does put a picture out, it's trash.
Well, no, in fairness, I mean, we're talking, what, 70s technology. So we've had, what, 40-odd years of advancement since then? The average mobile phone now has more processing power in something you can put in your pocket than was used to send people to the moon.
Yeah. But
now, what's to say that somebody that can find some way of launching something outside of the escape velocity of the atmosphere cannot build equipment that's capable of monitoring independently from NASA, from everybody else, and they stick it out there and they let it send signals back?
Well, there you go, man.
Why not?
you can get into space. That's not a problem.
And we'll soon find out if they've got technology way above and beyond what they're telling us about, because if somebody does do that, it's not going to last very long.
Well, all the doggone technology that you have in your hand, you know doggone good and well that the governments of the world and the corporations of the world have better, because it's always about whoever's got the biggest gun is the king, you know. So that's just as simple as that, man. But
well, let's look at technology just briefly before we finish off. What you have is what's known as windows of opportunity. When technology is developed, the people that develop want to reimburse themselves for their effort, for their costs, for their research and development. So effectively what you're getting is something that was designed maybe 5 years ago but being released now, because that's the time it takes to make sure that you've done your product testing, all your marketing and everything else associated with generating a profit from the device or application that you've created. So you're always going to be slightly behind the times. Everything that you buy nowadays is obsolete before you bought it.
Yeah, the doggone computers.
Yeah, well, the time, energy, and intellect, as I said before, that they put into it, they want to be reimbursed for that. Which is kind of cool, because, you know, the difference between a 10.2 megapixel and a 12 megapixel and a 16 megapixel camera is not so fundamentally different.
Well, I can understand that. I can understand that you want to make some money off of what you build. Okay, that's cool. I can get along with that. But
the reason why you have to make that money is because of the way the structure of society has been manufactured.
Yeah, but to send out special interest groups to sit there and lobby Congress and the Senate over this bogus climate change so that you can basically hide back your technology and to make more money and then charge people. You're stealing from people. That's it. They're just flat out stealing from people.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that, Shaziz, because most companies internally, even if they don't publish it externally, have what they call a technology roadmap. The stuff that's under research and development that really isn't fit for commercial purpose because they have not ironed out all the kinks in it. Unlike Microsoft, they just seem to publish whatever they've got, regardless of how good or bad it is, and hopefully a bunch of nerds on the forums are going to be able to provide the solutions for free for them to fix it. But generally, a technology roadmap is reasonable because you have an idea of what's coming in the future. What you have now and what's going to be available at a later date. Gives you a good idea to plan and focus if your business or your personal life, and you can, you know, look forward to new things that are coming.
Yeah, well, see, that would be fine as well, but the thing is, if you're going to do all this by deceit, you know, that to me drives me nuts.
It's not necessarily by deceit, it's by the fact that they need to be able to deliver products that work.
Well,
most companies will have a technology roadmap. The difference between, say, a single-core mobile phone and the current quad-core mobile phones. Now, the just disingenuous part of it comes from the fact that they don't tell you that you can unlock them. I mean, look at the PlayStation 3. It's got a 6-core Jaguar processor in it, hugely powerful processor. And when you bought the first versions, you could install Linux on it. A free open source operating system where you could harness the power of that processor for whatever you wanted to do with it. Now, isn't available in the later models.
Well, I'd like to get a hold of one of those old ones and do something like that. You know, like I said, though, if on the free electricity portion of the spectrum, you know, there's people out there that need pumps to pump water. There's people out there that need heating and cooling. There's definitely a need because of modern society and to run these cool toys we got for electricity. And I'm saying it's free. And I'm going to continue to say it's free. I'm going to continue argue with. Yeah?
In 1990, I was working as a computer sales guy. I mean, I was kind of young. I was about 18 years old. But that was the late 80s, early 90s. And there were corporations at the time, engineering companies, that were using Commodore 64 computers. Because they had a programmable CPU and you could use them for robotic functions. What do we have now?
Well,
I mean, the Commodore 64 was, what, maybe 5 or 6 years out of date by the late 90s.
Had a lot of fun with the Commodore 64s and the old Tandy Radio Shack ones.
Oh, the
TRS-80s.
Yeah, because you had the Texas Instruments TI-99A as well, the Fender. But the point I'm trying to make is the more they develop the technology, the more they lock it up so it cannot be used for its full potential.
Well, that's a shame, man, because like I said, we should be so much further advanced than what we are right now. And as a society, if there's a reason enough to go to war over oil or resources out there, then there ought to be just enough reason to get away from having to use oil so you don't have to have wars and stuff. You know, the earth is 3/4 covered in water. You talked about that earlier. There's no way that anybody on this planet should go thirsty. And as far as all the rest of the technology and resources out there, it's abundant. And until we, the people, decide that we're not going to rely on other entities for our own need and we start taking care of our neighbors, you know, it's like you said, you run a cord across to your neighbors to give them electricity, and if your neighbors are provided for and you're provided for, you know, and everybody expands on that, that's what mad science is all about, you know, bringing the ideas to the table. You know, they can make all the money they want on everything else, but as far as electricity, you know, the basic needs of heat and light, whatever, I'm wanting to give it to the world for free, and there's other people out there wanting to do the same thing. I just want to bring them to the table. So with that said, you got any last words there, brother?
Well, as for throwing an extension cable over either side of my fence, because there was a house on either side, the knowledge that I could make sure that their refrigerated and frozen food would last through a power outage was probably more important to me than, you know, me saying, oh, look at me, aren't I great? I've got a generator, you haven't.
Well, I tell everybody, and I mean it, that if the power grid ever goes down, to come over to old Shaziz's house, it'll be the one with the lights on. Ain't no joke. I may not
Shaziz,
be able to.
You got room for 7 billion people.
Hey, if they can get over here, what the heck? The more the merrier. It's a BYOB, though.
Guys, I've waffled, I've spoken, I've made my opinion clear, I hope. But I would like to say au revoir and thank you very much for listening.
All right, and I appreciate it. So, everybody, stay tuned for the Hope Show. And if you want to join in on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow, that would be great. All we're doing here on the Mad Science Show is trying to point out the obvious, that we should already have free energy. I mean, it's there. And it's all a matter about if you want it bad enough and you want to do it, you can. We've given all kinds of ideas, and you can take these ideas and run with them. Bring in all the brilliant minds and the talents, the gifts, given to everybody out there together to the table. You want to get it done quicker, figure out a way to solve the intellectual problem or the ego problem, and bring all these brilliant minds to the table, and let's build something. Let's just get it done. That's what I'm saying. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Aw, crap.